Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
We have a lot of stories. One of them is about a famous hurler. We'll get into that. But joining me is Louisa Meehan, who, of course, is from Woodview HRM. Louisa, you're very welcome along. And Declan Ralph, who is a director of BWG Foods. You're both very welcome into the studio. Good Halloween's all.
Yeah, all very good.
Yeah. Lovely.
Hearing is still working. And
all intact.
get past that for another year. Okay, folks, listen, we have a lot of variety. There's a good diversity to the teams and some of the characters involved in our paper review. And we might go to you, Louisa, first. We have DJ Carey dominating former Kilkenny hurler. Hasn't been sentenced, we need to emphasise strongly. We expect, though, a custodial sentence. The judge involved in the case has said that. But we're hearing more trouble and more layers to this story in the Irish Independent, Louisa. We're talking about money owed to the revenue commissioners.
Yeah, I mean, look, it really feels like he's been given a window to go home and put his affairs in order before he goes back in, I think, on Monday, and we'll find out his faith. In total, he has, you know, defrauded individuals, so 13 victims, 10 counts, of €394,127, which is, you know, it's just unimaginable, particularly when he has used a cancer diagnosis to do that. On top of that, as you're saying, the revenue commissioners have had a judgment against him, actually two different judgments against him. So one back in 2013 for €6,722 in relation to VAT, and another judgment of €3,660 registered against him in December 2011 by Musgraves in Cork. So he just seems to have judgments coming up against him financially from every angle and every direction. He's ringing friends, asking me, he's got great friends, because he's asking them, can I borrow 40,000 to head over to Seattle for medical treatment? And they're going, sure, no problem. Let me give you that money. So, you know, he's got a really good network. But when you hear that he's told people that he is terminally ill, he's asking money for his treatment, and he is in Mount Juliet in Kilkenny with Rory McIlroy playing golf while he's supposed to be terminally ill. It is just such a disservice to individuals who go through heartache on a daily basis. And, you know, he deserves whatever he gets.
Well, we'll find out what he gets on Monday. Declan, as Louisa outlines, the sheer scale of it really comes across. We all kind of knew about the Dennis O'Brien piece, although I see the amount involved there is 130,000. I know he's a very wealthy man, but nevertheless, you would feel that. And then some of what you might call civilians, I mean, the list of named victims, I won't read them all out, but there's a lot of names there. Sometimes it's 10,000, sometimes it's over 100,000, sometimes it's smaller amounts. I mean, the sheer scale of it, certainly I was very much blown away. Maybe it was just me, but what do you think?
No, absolutely, yeah, blown away. I mean, the sheer scale of it, as you say, is phenomenal. Large amounts, small amounts, relative maybe to people's income as well and means. There was a leash businessman, Tom Brennan, loaned him €40,000 to travel to get treatment for the cancer in Seattle, allegedly. And I would agree with Louisa. I think it does a disservice to people with cancer and with, you know, that whole process they have to go through. For somebody to you know, fake it, and some of the photographs you see of, you know, phone charges.
I mean, they're vaguely comical at one level, but this is a real deal now.
So serious. And the other interesting thing is that the span of time here where he was supposed to be terminally ill goes from 2014 to 2022. So either it was, you know, very well faked, which it probably was for the people that he knew. But I think as well, he used his fame, if you want to use that word, from his hurling career, which was, you know, well known for his hurling, well known for his skill and all of that. So he really used that, you know, for badness, really, I suppose.
There's some amazing stuff in this story in The Independent. For example, one particular victim gave Carey money and to go to America, and then he rang him and found out that it wasn't a foreign ringtone. And he found out where he was living and found out that he was effectively in Kilkenny and pretty much down the road. And then he tried to. So, I mean, there is a comical element to some of this, but it's so deadly serious, the sums involved and the breach of trust.
The breach of trust is just you know, it is unforgivable. And I have people in my world who have had to come out and get people to give them money for medical treatment, not necessarily for cancer. But you see the pain and the suffering that those families have gone through. And then you have this person who's using his fame, his connection with people who are clearly very wealthy, to get money and to abuse that trust. And he's abused the trust of the individuals who've given him the money, but actually of the entire country, you know, really, because this impacts on the next person who does need to get the money. And that's the person I feel sorry for, not him.
Every fundraiser in Ireland now might be under a little bit of a cloud, or people might just pinch themselves and say, well, hang on, how do I know this isn't a DJ Curry 2.0?
Yeah. And so how do you know?
Yeah,
like, that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there'd be a little bit of a fade factor, but it could take a while. Anyway, we'll see on Monday, because we'll have to let the judge do his work and see what sentence he decides is appropriate. Let's talk about another man who possibly should be in front of the courts. That is Prince Andrew, once known as Prince Andrew, now known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. It's an awful mouthful. Not radio presenter friendly, that name.
No.
But Declan, we're seeing him losing the house. We're seeing him losing his titles. Prince Charles III, King Charles. I'm getting my kings and princes mixed up here, which is an occupation as we talk about the Windsor. But he has made this big step yesterday. But I don't know if it's over yet. I don't know if until ex-Prince Andrew leaves Britain, or is this just going to continue? Where do you see the story evolving?
I think it will continue. I think that, you know, in fairness now to King Charles III, he has acted here. It's described in the Examiner as his most consequential act. And I think it has some road to run, I would say, Emmett, to be honest. There's more to come out here. There's so much. Again, the lies here, in sort of similar to the other story, where, you know, I had finished my relationship with Epstein by that stage, but he hadn't, because there's photographs, there's emails, there's a whole load of other communication that has emerged. So he hadn't really finished his relationship with him. It's also difficult in the sense that he's not gone yet. You know, he's still there, as you say. So maybe there's a little bit more to run. Where is he going to go to?
And his wife, of course, what's going to happen to her, Sarah Ferguson?
She said she doesn't want to go to Norfolk. So interesting. It's difficult. Charles, I think, is also getting the affairs in order before William takes over, because, I mean, Charles's reign will be a lot shorter than his mm-hmm. mother. So I think he's trying to get things in order for
Louisa. I know the media reasonably well. I don't think anyone's going to leave this story, no matter what happens, right? Mm-hmm. So I think people are going to continue to say, what's going on with Andrew Mountbatten Windsor? Where is he living? Is he getting any public funds? What's he doing with himself every day? I think the curiosity about him, I don't see it ending, rightly or wrong.
100%, let's be clear here. He is going to get public funds, whether they come from the taxpayer directly or they go through King Charles, because he doesn't have any private income. I think his private income is in the region of around £20,000 a year, which he can't possibly live off given his level of celebrity. For me, I think this is too little too late. I think it is actually despicable what has happened. He was, you know, even if you overlook what he is alleged to have done himself, because that hasn't been proven, he was in regular contact with two individuals who are convicted paedophiles, and with Harry Weinstein, who was also Harvey Weinstein. Thank you.
Just in case there's someone else by the other name.
Harry Weinstein, who is also a convicted sex offender. So he has an ongoing relationship with individuals who are of high status and are convicted. So there is absolute clarity in relation to what they have done.
There was a picture somewhere during the week, I don't know if you saw it, of Harvey Weinstein, Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein somewhere on royal property somewhere.
So that was thought,
what a chamber
Lodge.
Of horrors.
So that was in Andrew's property in Royal Lodge. And in the email that he sent to Jeffrey Epstein in February 2021, the day after the photo was released, he ended it by saying, "We will play some more soon." Now, I don't know what you are going to do in terms of playing with a paedophile, but it doesn't sound good. I think that Charles has stepped up here to a point, but as the representative of the crown, as they call it, it is too little too late. They should have stood up for the rights of women and children years ago.
Yeah, well, and I wasn't around, I wasn't reporting on this, but I understand when this story first emerged, the Windsor family were quite sort of dismissive of the whole thing. So they have been brought around.
It is only in the most recent statement that they released that they have ever, ever sympathised with the victims and come out publicly and said that they stand alongside the victims.
Okay. Well, now, are you ready for the most dramatic radio segue of all time? Now permanent TSB. But I just do leave the sort of general news and move into the business domain to talk a little bit about Declan. Permanent TSB put up for sale. They've nothing to do with the Windsors in any form, we should stress. So what was really interesting about this story is they were obviously bailed out, and we have to use that word, right? At the time of the financial crisis, they got over 4 billion euros of taxpayers' funding. They've always been, certainly in my eyes, the poor relation of the three main lenders behind AIB and Bank of Ireland. It hasn't been an easy time since the bailout. But if we could get competition in via this sale, that would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
It would be very good. It would be very good for consumers, really good. It's hard to know whether the overall sale of PTSB would be good for consumers or good for the people, you know, the people working in PTSB as well, because it depends who buys it, Emmett, I think. You know, if a private venture capital were to buy it, they might want to cut the cost, cut the overhead, cut people and take some value out of it that way. Whereas if maybe another European bank were to look at it, well, they could come in and maybe look to grow and compete, as you say, and offer more choice and compete very strongly with AIB and Bank of Ireland. So the other thing that's, I suppose, unique now to PTSB is that they haven't ever paid back the taxpayer the money. They've paid some money back, but not all of it. Whereas AIB this week, probably finished.
Yeah, the examiner worked out that's about a 300 million shortfall is the most likely outcome, and even by Ronan Smith. Yeah.
And that a lot depends on the share price. I mean, they calculate that at the moment it's running at about 285 a share. It was 137 apparently in January, and they would need about 383, so another euro on top of that to get all the money back. So
yeah, the thing that I find strange about it, Louisa, is normally you don't sell anything unless you think there's a buyer out there, right? It would seem a kind of purposeless thing to do otherwise. So maybe there is someone lined up. But I think Declan's right. If we were to get a private equity buyer who is going to cut the business and look to get value by reducing costs, you know, I don't know, will the government go ahead with that? Would people say, well, we don't want that buyer? How does a beauty parade work? Do you sort of go, I like your offer, you're offering us the most money, but the things attached to it we don't like? So it could be quite awkward.
It could be a little bit tricky for the government. I would agree with you. I think that there's a high probability that they have at least one, if not two, buyers lined up in the background, because the government tend to keep their cards close to their chest. And it's a dangerous thing to do, to sort of add that degree of uncertainty into the stock market and the share price and everything else if it isn't going to go through. It does seem that Permanent TSB has been posting strong results. So they're increasing really across the board. And if you look just at the mortgage lending alone, to the end of September, it was up 64% to 2.1 billion year on year. So it kind of feels a little bit like things are good. They have been good. They're stable. The economy broadly is stable. Let's get out of this now before we end up in a situation where we lose and it's a bigger loss than 300 million. The thing that struck me actually in reading the entire article in the Examiner is the sort of the lack of focus on banks like Revolut. And if you look at Revolut, yes, they don't have branches. They're never going to have branches. That's not their business model. But the market share that they hold probably is far in excess of what people would expect it to be. And I think that the real competition coming into the financial services sector isn't coming from the traditional bricks and mortar
banks. And any buyer, Louisa, I suppose, might say, I don't want these branches, I don't want these ATMs, I don't want this counter service. Exactly. I like some of the other parts. I like your mortgage business, maybe you've got an SME loan book. But could I just carve out the branch bit, you know, and that's, of course, the bit where the staff are. So
yeah,
it's tricky from that point of view.
It is tricky. Look, even Revolut has staff. They employ a lot of people too. So even if you do carve out the physical branches, you will still need a proportion of staff. But can they do that? Yes, they absolutely can. I mean, I think one thing that's clear is that the purchaser is highly unlikely to be Bank of Ireland or AIB. So it will be competition in the market.
Is it a Santander, one of these big European
banks?
Wouldn't
it be great if we have one of the big European banks coming and investing in the Irish economy?
Yeah, that we'll see. We'll probably find out in the new year. Let me move you on to agricultural matters. I can see a nervous looking Declan go, where's he go with this, right?
As a city boy from the north side of Dublin,
Maybe we should sit this question out. So we've got John Burns writing in the Irish Independent saying the price of land, agricultural land, is up by 10%. It's about 10,000 euros per acre. Dublin, of course, is there any spare land in Dublin? Apparently there is. And also places like Carlow, Kilkenny, Waterford, Wexford. So the southeast Should we be worried because we're trying to build houses on this land? So that's a problem. If you're a farmer, is it great news? Some of the implications.
Yeah, I think there's a there's an east versus west issue here. As myself and Louisa were talking about this earlier, it's certainly in Dublin, the price of land is more expensive, but there's less of it available. And I mean, there was only 475 acres sold in Dublin, Emmett, in the last year, the period that this covers. This is about farmland. It's not about the development land. We do need land for development because we need to build houses, obviously. And also, from a farming point of view, it's a challenge because, you know, farmers wanting to stay in the business, wanting to grow the business, or people wanting to get into farming, the land is expensive, so therefore that's going to be a challenge for them. And you're right, the sunny southeast, as we might know it, is expensive. Dublin's expensive, but then in the west, it's much more modest and below that median price that you mentioned of just under €10,000.
Yeah, we'll have to see. It does, as you say, it's farming for the moment. So yeah, we can't say this is in development land. We'll leave that one for the moment. We'll move on to somebody who's known in this parish occasionally, Ivan Yates, I think is his name, right? He's in the Irish Independent. Fionnán Sheehan is reading about him, Louisa. Let's just stick to what the Independent say rather than going beyond that. So they're effectively saying that Jim Gavin was coached, or certainly Fianna Fáil were coached in some form media-wise, like media training, by Ivan Yates. And he sort of says in this, he is quoted saying, "I can neither confirm nor deny it," which is sometimes it can be a confirmation. So he was obviously thrust into the presidential debate when he said, "Let's smear the bejesus out of Catherine Connolly," and all of that. That's the background. I know it's a bit of a wheels within wheels, but effectively the Indo are looking at the role of Ivan Yates in the election for good or bad.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think with this story, this is an individual who earns his money from multiple different sources. He is a political pundit. He provides, he does speaking events and various events like that. And around 5% of his income comes from media training, which is what Jim Gavin got. Now, whether he got it from Ivan Yates or somebody else, he absolutely needed it. And you can be sure that Heather Humphreys and Catherine Connolly also had media training, probably from somebody who came from the political sphere as well.
He never rang me, you know.
Like, I don't see it as a massive issue. I mean, he's earning money based on his skill set, doing what he does. And I actually think it's really smart of Fianna Fáil to go to somebody who's an ex-Fine Gael minister to say, okay, well, we know what Fianna Fáil thinks. You can understand a bit more maybe how Fine Gael thinks, although in here some of his Fine Gael colleagues are saying that they don't listen to him at all, which is quite interesting. But they're going to the competitor and they're saying, can you come and teach us how we can better communicate effectively what we are saying? You know, as you read through the article, there's quotes in here from Ivan Yates where he's really, really clear that, yes, he works with politicians, he works with individuals, he does not work on policy, so he doesn't give them ideas. What he's doing is saying, what are your ideas and how can you best communicate them effectively? That's his job.
Yeah, I did like the line where he says, Jim Gavin, I felt he could improve somewhat.
Well, you know, there was room for improvement.
We all learnt that. Yes. Do you want to have a brief anything on that, Declan?
No, I think it's covered well. I do like the idea that he sort of separates in his mind his punditry and his commentary and his sort of analysis from his coaching. You know, so he has a clear sort of view that they are two different things.
Now, are you an ideas man? Are you an ideas person who just generates ideas every day, new ways of doing things?
I have been known to, yeah. I have been known to.
Or do you want to give you €5,000 in cash? This is a story in the Irish Independent with a picture of their Director General, Kevin Backhurst. He doesn't have a bag of swag in his hand in the picture, but the article suggesting that staff internally can come up with ideas, Declan, and they can get €5,000 and then maybe be involved in the project from then on. This is in an email sent to staff, according to the Independent. Good idea to have good ideas?
Well, it's a good idea to have good ideas, but if it's your job to come up with good ideas, well, you'd wonder why you need a €5,000 incentive to come up with it. There's another interesting angle on it here is that, you know, would staff begin to withhold their ideas from their own programming teams, you know, so that they could pitch it in for the 5K?
This is my average one. Here's my 5,000 one.
I'm not giving you that one. So I'll hold on to that one for me. They do then have the opportunity to be involved in it and they'll get credit for coming up with the ideas. But it looks like that will have to be done on top of the day job from what the article is saying. So maybe if there's, you know, you're going the extra mile, you're having to do some extra work, extracurricular work, maybe you should get some payment for it. But I think if your job is to come up with ideas and creative, you know, creativity, well, that should be covered in your salary as well.
Yeah. And I think, look, two points. One, if this is an addition to your day job, how are they making sure that they're staying in line with the Organisation of Working Time Act? Because are they recording these hours? Are they not? For me, as I read through this, like, I think giving 5,000 euros for ideas is a great plan, but I actually think that it would have been far more suitable or more effective for RTE to go out and say, actually, we're going to give this to students who are out there, maybe
non-RTE staff.
You know, the media, people who are their listeners. What do you want to hear? And if you come up with a really good idea and it's creative, and yes, there may be work involved in what that looks like, then we'll pay you for that and we'll give you
very
credit.
Very briefly, I used to be a kitchen porter. Wonderful years being a kitchen porter. I didn't get any tips, didn't get any money. But the Irish Times talking about the Ivy restaurant and saying the issue of tips remains something that waiters and kitchen porters and other staff in restaurants are at each other's throats over.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you read the headline, you're kind of like kind of listening to it going, oh, it's tips, like I don't give a lot on tips, or I give 20%, whatever it might be, but that doesn't amount to a huge amount. When you break this down, you're talking 20,000 euros a week or thereabouts for the staff. And in a nutshell, the money that's going in to the Ivy, around 70% of that is going directly to the wait staff. And then the other 30% is being divided amongst a number of different staff, including managers who are getting a sizable amount of it. But up until very, very recently, none of that was going to the kitchen staff. And the kitchen staff, in case you're sitting there thinking that they're earning a huge amount of money, the chefs are being paid between 14 and 20 euros an hour, which isn't a huge amount. The kitchen porters are getting paid less than that. So they're really are in or around minimum wage. And it's one of the toughest jobs. You know, knowing people who work in the hospitality sector, one of the hardest jobs to get is the pot wash, the person to come in to wash the pots. And I know individuals who work in this industry who have gone, had to leave the country and bring people in to go do that job. So if you're not sharing the wealth, it's incredibly difficult. But from a HR perspective, they've kind of tied themselves up in a knot, because if you've created a reward strategy and policy that gives the wait staff 70%, and now you come along and say, well, actually, no, we're going to divide this equally amongst all staff, what you're going to end up doing is reduce the income significantly.
Okay, well, let's see what the Ivy and the others, not just them, but they're the ones featured in the Irish Times. Declan, I'm going to finish off. Nobody, it used to be called News for Insomniacs and Programming for Insomniacs, which was the coverage of the Oireachtas. Apparently, not even insomniacs are interested. According to a story in The Examiner, they say the broadcasting of Dáil sessions is in doubt, as literally no company has come forward to a tender to do this. So there's 8 million euros in value, apparently, but it doesn't seem to make sense, apparently.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make sense. And even the incumbent, which is Pi Communications, didn't re-tender for it. And they're saying it makes no sense in terms of their view of the world. The Dáil clerk, Peter Finnegan, confirmed that the tender they put out in September concluded on the 10th of October and nobody's put in a bid. There is a little bit of controversy in the background, Emmett, around how the staff are currently looked after and all of that and the working time. And Louisa would probably spend 2 days talking about that. But I think it's very important that we retain it for visibility, for openness, that the actual proceedings are transmitted, and so hopefully that will be resolved.
Hopefully someone will come forward. Yeah. There's 8 million euros out there. Obviously it depends what it costs you to broadcast, but exactly, it doesn't seem a small amount of money. Listen, we'll have to leave it there for the moment. Louisa Meehan is from Woodview HRM, and you did hear at the end there the voice of Declan Ralph, who's a director of BWG Foods. Both of you, well done on surviving Halloween.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.